So what happened to all that stock market optimism?
Marketplace Morning Report is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
From American Public Media in Los Angeles, good morning. It's the Morning Open. I'm Steve Chiotakis, in for Bill Radke, who's back next week. Most world markets have been on the decline today, just a day after Europe announced a near-trillion-dollar rescue plan. Had a lot of people popping the champagne corks yesterday. Today, though, a lot of folks are tasting vinegar. We're going to get some analysis coming up. First, though, where's Wall Street? And the sad music today, unfortunately. We have markets down right now. Here in the U.S., stocks are off on the S&P about 0.5%. Same for the NASDAQ. And the Dow now down 44 points at 10,740. European shares are off, too, anywhere between 1 and 2% in London, Frankfurt, and in Paris. And Asian shares close lower as well. Julie Neiman is analyst at Smith Moore & Company. She's with us live this morning from St. Louis. Good morning, Julie.
Morning, Steve.
So the market's, headed back down. I thought this rescue plan, Julie, in Europe, announced yesterday, was lifting everyone's spirits. Why the about-face?
Well, it was a little bit of a relief rally, but what we're looking at is a resumption of the correction. And we've had three of these since last year. This is your fourth correction going on. The pullback is reflecting everything we're really concerned about, namely global debt. We have a crushing amount of global debt, and just because one of the catastrophe countries was bailed out, will it spread to the others?
And which country was that? That was Greece, right?
Exactly. And now we have Spain, Italy, Ireland, and Portugal all facing the same situation. So it ain't over till it's over.
I want to talk a little bit about Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac, Julie. Both mortgage giants reported big losses. And the need for billions of more in taxpayer dollars. What's going on with them, and when is this need for money going to end?
Well, officially, the need could carry on, but it's going to come to an end in 2012. That's when the government says they will continue to cover all their losses until then. There's hope that somehow you're going to see some residential stabilizing here, but the big question is, should the government even be in the housing business anymore? So you're going to have continuous needs for stabilizing the housing market because they're the only source of any kind of mortgage financing at this point in time. The banks are still clutching their capital with a death grip.
Are you saying that there's no stability yet in the housing market?
If you take a look at the Case-Shiller model, it says that housing prices could go down possibly another 20%. There's been a little bit of stabilization, or at least no free fall, in the commercial side, but that's starting to resume again. So the entire real estate market still has further downside, and that's going to hurt all the participants.
Julie Neiman in St. Louis. Julie, thanks.
You bet.
The oil spill in the Gulf of Mexico keeps moving and spreading. Congressional hearings are happening later today into what went wrong. BP and other drilling contractors are expected to blame each other for causing the accident. But meantime, the Obama administration is expected to recommend splitting up the agency that oversees offshore drilling. Marketplace's John Dimsdale is with us live from our studio in Washington. Hi, John.
Hello, Steve.
What agency are we talking about?
The Minerals Management Service. It's 1,700 employees inside the Interior Department with two missions. One, it enforces oil drilling regulations, but two, it grants drilling leases and collects more than $10 billion a year in royalties from oil companies. And it's had some problems in the past. A 2008 internal investigation found conflicts of interest and, quote, a culture of ethical failure there. It's been a real revolving door problem, too, with the industry it regulates. Employees have moved back and forth between the regulator and the oil companies.
And changes? What kind of changes are we talking about?
Well, today, the Interior Secretary, Ken Salazar, will say that the oil spill in the Gulf makes reforms more urgent. And he's going to call for separating the service into two parts, a regulator that inspects oil rigs and enforces safety rules, and then another agency to collect royalty dollars.
Mm-hmm. All right. So have there been any changes in oil leasing from the government since this big spill?
Yeah, the department indefinitely suspended an effort to expand oil and gas leases off the Virginia coast just after the spill.
All right. Marketplace's John Dimsdale in Washington. John, thanks.
You're welcome.
Well, BP's been spraying something called Corexit onto that spill in the Gulf. It's a chemical that breaks up the slick into tiny droplets that sink underwater. But it, like the oil, presents a lot of problems. Jill Barchet reports.
BP is hoping that Corexit will prevent oil from washing ashore and destroying fragile wetlands. But Richard Chard of Defenders of Wildlife worries that dispersed oil will get eaten by fish and end up in the food chain.
The oil's toxic, the dispersant's toxic, and the combination is toxic. The whole thing is turning this particular piece of water into a giant chemistry experiment.
Nalco is the company that makes Corexit. Charlie Pager is a spokesman.
Everything is toxic in depending on how much of it you have. And when properly applied, it is less toxic than the oil itself.
But there's no independent confirmation of that. Nalco isn't required to publicly disclose what's in Corexit for competitive reasons. Environmental activists like Charter say we don't have better options to protect the shoreline. That explains why BP has bought Nalco's entire stockpile of Corexit and put in orders for a lot more. I'm Jill Barchet for Marketplace.
Listening to the Marketplace Morning Report for Tuesday, May 11th, 2010, at marketplace.org. Today, Thomson Reuters launches a new news service, part YouTube, part business channel. Think dozens of financial types giving their insights on futures and ratings and bonds to other financial types. Marketplace's Eve Troe reports.
The new web video service is called Reuters Insider. It goes live today from London.
When you come out of the tube station, you just get hit right in the face with this huge glass box studio. People are walking by. Everyone's kind of curious as to what it is.
That's managing editor Mike Stepanovich. He says the service is only for Reuters premium subscribers who already pay about $1,500 a month.
It's truly narrowcasting.
So users can search for the exact business news they want on, say, hog futures or quantitative easing, rather than waiting until news networks like CNBC get around to it. They can also shoot, edit, and upload their own takes on the global economy. And we all know the web can be a star maker. Jonathan Taplin studies online media at the University of Southern California.
For the young analyst trying to break into the TV game, it's probably a pretty good opportunity.
But don't count on seeing kittens making stock trades or CEOs lip-syncing to Lady Gaga. This is strictly business. I'm Eve Troe for Marketplace.
And full disclosure, Thomson Reuters is an underwriter of this program. In Riverside County, California, some 50 miles east of L.A., is Mira Loma. The area has some of the worst air pollution in the nation. Freeways and railroads are a big source of the problem, but researchers say warehouses also play a role. From the Sustainability Desk, Marketplace's Caitlin Carroll reports.
I'm standing in Mira Loma Village. It's a neighborhood of about 100 small stucco houses. A rail line runs down one side. Two major trucking routes, Highway 60 and Interstate 15, intersect on the other. Residents say living here isn't easy.
Hard to breathe sometimes, and I call it respiratory problems, you know.
We got headaches. Our nose would burn. We had soot all over our face, our body.
I'm out in the afternoon gardening, and I have to go in the house because I can smell those fumes. You can smell them now.
That's Charles Lanatua, Alexandra Jimenez, and Estella Portillo. This area used to be mostly farmland, but as Los Angeles expanded, companies built their distribution centers further east. Now sprawling warehouses cover Mira Loma. They serve companies like Walmart, Nestle, and Coca-Cola. More than 800 diesel trucks often pass through Mira Loma in an hour. Some drop off cargo from the ports of Los Angeles and Long Beach. Others pick it up. Ed Aval teaches environmental health at the University of Southern California.
So increasingly, we're beginning to understand that, in a way, warehouses are sort of like magnets for pollution.
Problem is, the county doesn't have money to move residents or to pay the truckers to retrofit their rigs. John Field works for the local county supervisor.
Obviously, from a land use planning standpoint, if we had it to do over again, Mira Loma Village would not be there. But that's the way it goes.
Penny Noonan heads the Center for Community Action and Environmental Justice. She says warehouses have cropped up here since the late 90s. Now the community wants to stop any new ones. Noonan encourages Mira Loma residents to speak up at county meetings. They're helping log pollution stats, too.
It's where the lessons are being learned really the hard way, and it's where the crisis is.
Newnham is advising states with expanding distribution hubs like South Carolina, Kansas, and New Jersey to put some space between the people and the products. In Mira Loma, California, I'm Caitlin Carroll for Marketplace.
What is expected to be the most expensive World Cup ever staged gets kicked off in South Africa 1 month from today. But soccer's governing body had to pitch in $100 million to keep preparations on track. For Marketplace, the BBC's Karen Allen reports from Johannesburg.
South Africa's built 5 new stadiums, a new airport, and brand new roads. But even a $6 billion budget wasn't enough to ensure the Soccer World Cup began on schedule. Several countries complained about the practice fields. Jerome Volker is the head of soccer's world governing body, known as FIFA.
We know that we had to add some money for the team-based camp, where some teams were unhappy about the level of services.
Billions of dollars have also been spent on grassroots and social projects. Danny Jordan is the driving force behind this year's World Cup. He believes the infrastructure will leave a lasting legacy in South Africa.
All of the things that anyone who wants to come and conduct business in South Africa will have. And it's about creating jobs for people who live here so that they too have a chance of a better life.
The International Soccer Association won't have to go searching for the extra $100 million. The agency's already made $3 billion from the sale of World Cup TV broadcasts. In Johannesburg, I'm the BBC's Karen Allen for Marketplace.
And finally, in Australia, a member of parliament is trying to figure out why his mobile phone bill was so high. Taxpayers usually cover the charges, which politician Russell Wortley says typically runs about $180. But this past month, his 13-year-old son downloaded some quote-unquote free soccer games on the phone. It doesn't cost money to play the games. I'm sorry, it doesn't cost money to get the games, but it does cost money to play the games. And the boy played and played and played to the tune of like $9,000. Wortley says he's not going to pass the bill on to taxpayers. Instead, he'll make his son do some practice reps for all those soccer games he's playing online. Check us out online at marketplace.org. I'm also Twittering. You can follow me on Twitter, Chiatakis, MMR. I'm Steve Chiatakis in Los Angeles. This is the Marketplace Morning Report.
American Public Media.